This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat-up old running shoes, Sierra says save on top brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well, then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now. Go!
Hello and welcome to the Rest Is Football question and answer episode with Micah Richards, Alan Shearer and me, Gary Lineker. Thank you once again for sending in your questions. Some really good ones this week. I think you'll agree, chaps. Let's start with Harry G. My question is about TV cameras. Are you aware of the TV cameras when you're playing, or do you forget as soon as the whistle goes? And does it make you or others you've played with play better, worse when you know you're playing live on TV? Hardly any games I played were on live on TV back then. It was quite rare that you'd see yourself on television. It was quite a big thing just to appear on Match of the Day because they only used to kind of one or two games highlights back then.
Yeah.
World Cup's different. You know you're on. I don't think you think about that at all.
You're aware of it before the game, but once that whistle kicks off, then the last thing you're thinking about, or I was anyway, it was about TV cameras or this game's on TV or whatever it is. You just got to go out and do what you have to do.
I don't know. I think so. Micah might be different on this one.
Because cameras, lights, camera action. I'm ready to go. I know exactly what's happening. I scored my goal against Villa in the FA Cup when I was 17. That was on TV.
I dropped the F word in the post-match interview.
18, made my debut for England. That was on TV. Every game, every big moment I've had in my life.
You've played in the era when pretty much all games are televised in some way, shape or form.
But it depends. So as you get older and stuff, you know about Match of the Day all the time. But when I was young, you know, you pundits and you presenters. So when I talked about it, I came on the scene early. I could do
no
wrong.
You never mentioned it.
But then there was a period where I wasn't playing so well. And because I was English, I think you guys let me get away with it. But as soon as you get to 21, 22, 23, oh my, that's when you're thinking, oh, Match of the Day tonight. Please, please, Alan, Gary, Wrighty, do not slander me, please, on TV. So the older you get, you definitely think about, oh, please, Match of the Day.
So you used to try and play better because the TV cameras or you're on a live game. Is that what you're saying?
When I was younger, I was like Victory Shield. When I was under 16, I scored on TV as well. All the big moments come on. It's just, I don't know. Something about the camera, just, we have a great relationship, you know?
Did you used to get your hair cut before games when you're on telly?
See, this is what takes me to
you,
like,
to my... knobhead. You did as well, didn't you? You did as well, didn't you?
But the trims were different back then, you know. The trims are like HD now, you know. But back then...
I remember that interview. You had like little swizzles.
Yes! Games,
didn't you?
Used to have like a side part, a swizzle. Hmm. Oh, I had all sorts of trims when I was young, but yeah.
Swizzle?
A little swizzle, yeah.
Fuck's a swizzle.
Yeah.
I think it's a salty snack, isn't it?
Swizzle. Whistle.
I'm looking forward to Mike's answer to the next question, actually, from Danny. With the dedication needed to become a professional footballer, what sacrifices did you make in your own lives to allow you to give everything to football in order to make it?
Fucking hell, what sacrifices? These are jokes. These are jokes. I've stepped into character of Big Meeks now. I'm not. It was banter. That's all it was.
Yeah.
So, do you guys want to go first, or
we'll give the professional answers? Shall we?
Go on, Al.
The sacrifices. What? Christmas, New Year, birthdays, summer holiday, or everything. But they're all worth it because of the life you have.
Weekends.
Yeah. But is it worth it? Of course, it's worth it to be a footballer. I'm not saying that. That sounded ridiculous. But don't you think you miss out on a lot of the social side? So I'm talking...
You didn't.
Outside. Well, I didn't. But you guys, outside of football, because you're just like a robot. You go to training, you know, your boots are there for you, your kit's there for you, you get like a family there. And everyone outside of that bubble... It's like outsiders, so you miss the real social side. I'm not just talking about going out and drinking or whatever. I'm talking about just, you know, family, you know, and making the effort to see people and all. I think it just goes out the window.
It never felt like a sacrifice, though, did it? It was just
not a sacrifice.
Yeah,
not
just doing something that
the art, you know what the hardest part, I think, is, guys, is after you've been, like knees and back and ankles and all of that, it's like, that's... You know, you're training every day and you're playing and you're injured. That's what you feel most when you retire, or for me anyway.
Yeah, well, talking about retiring and stuff like that, that leads me on to the next question from Freddie Webb. Was there ever a moment in your career where you were going through a really bad period and you wanted to quit, retire, but you carried on going, just like Beckham in 98 when he got sent off in the World Cup and got loads of abuse? Not for me. Alan, you had your terrible injuries, which might have worried you a little bit.
Definitely worried me, yeah. The first one, not so much, but then the second and third one, without doubt, I had to change my game, lost a yard of pace. So, yeah, I mean, but there was never ever a time when I thought, I'm done here. I always wanted to play till the end. I mean, the only time I went back on a U-turn, I said I was going to retire when I was 34, I think, in 2004-05. I said that was going to be my last season, but then Graham Souness persuaded me to stay on for another year. But nah, it never got that bad that I thought I was ever going to retire because of injuries or whatever it was. No,
I certainly didn't. Micah might be different again here, but again with your injuries, probably, Micah, which you had. Tell me, you finished your career relatively early. How old were you when you finished?
I was, when I probably played my last game, I think it was 29. But
that's
official.
Young. Official, that's young.
Yeah. I think for me, I just came to the realization that my body couldn't do it anymore. Like Alan said, now the aches and the pains and all that sort of thing. I've spoke about my time at Villa. Obviously, it wasn't great, but you know, I don't have anything against Villa. I want them to do well. The fans were great with me at times. So, but it's just, I sort of fell out of love with what came with football. You know, all the media side of things and the people trying to be your mate just for the wrong reasons. That side of thing. But I never wanted to retire, no. Never wanted to give up.
Ewan. Hi, guys. My question is in commentary. How is it decided when the co-commentator picks the man of the match? In European games, I've noticed that sometimes the British broadcasters will decide, while other times they don't. Are there any conditions in picking the man of the match? And has Alan ever given a man of the match that he's regretted after? you're the only one of us that really's ever done that. Alan, it is a funny thing that the co-commentator gets to decide who the man of the match is, isn't it? It's also quite difficult because you're so focused in on, you know, everything that's going on, what you're going to say. You suddenly go, Christ, I've got to pick a man of the match. Is that how it is? Or?
Yeah, totally that way, Gary, because you're that focused on systems and what they're doing and springing substitutes on and who's doing what and what have you. So I mean, sometimes it's blindingly obvious that if someone scores a hat-trick, then that's who you... But then when it's a really tight and tense game and it's there's like four or five can get it, then it becomes a little bit more difficult. You've got to give your decision with about, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes to go. I think I did one at Man United. I think it was Man United Wolves maybe a year or two ago. And I gave it to a Wolves defender, and about a minute later he scored a fucking own goal. I was like,
did you take it off him?
Oh, I couldn't. How can you take it off someone? You just got to try and be as polite as you can. I'm thinking, oh no, but yeah.
Commentator's curse, they call it.
Absolutely, that's how it works, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder who decided that originally. Somebody went, there's going to be a Man of the Match award, and the co-commentator's going to decide who it is.
Decide it, yes.
I have no idea how that started.
Me neither.
One question I have, why did they do it like 5 minutes before the game's up? Like, the co-commentator takes you to the break or takes you to the studio or to the he can just wait until the game's about to end. Do you know what I mean? Why do they give themselves 5 minutes?
I think my guess is what they want to do is because they then want to get the Man of the Match to do an interview. They then have to speak to the press officer before you can get that interview. You're there, they then like to announce it some grounds on the tannoy. So all of those reasons, I think. So probably because you can get an interview after the game.
And I think also they like to announce it in the ground, don't they? Right, just before the final whistle, whoever's won the Man of the Match. What about games where there's not, I mean, there's commentators obviously in all the games because we have them on Match of the Day, but they don't have co-commentators. And I know it's not the commentators that pick the Man of the Match. And there is Man of the Match for every game now. I wonder who picks them on those days.
I think it's the ones that where there's just a commentator is probably not so much a big game and it's not on TV because they would have co-commentator if it's on a TV. Yeah. So I would guess that it's not so much it's that important when it's just a commentator and not a co-commentator.
When I played, it was just picked by the club, and you'd only get Man of the Match awards for home games. Well, let's put it this way. The home player would always win it. Even if you lost 3-0, one of your players would get the Man of the Match award. And I remember at Spurs, no one wanted it because that meant you had to go and meet the sponsors in a lounge after and hang around forever and sign millions of autographs. Was it like that with you as well? Oh, how times have changed. While we're on the subject of commentators, that takes us nicely. It's all flowing so sweetly today. Pab asks, one of those. Start, bench, sell. John Motson, Barry Davis, Brian Moore. Love the podcast. Greetings from California. Thank you very much, Pab.
Well, you're going to have to answer this one because Micah wasn't around in, probably two of those, were you?
Yeah.
Do you remember Brian Moore, Micah, at all?
No.
It was ITV's football. Brilliant. They're all brilliant.
Yeah.
And actually, I know how competitive and slightly insecure commentators are, so I'm going to swerve this one.
Oh, interesting. When the shoe's on the other foot. Interesting. You want me to do it all the time, but you've bottled it.
Okay, I'll go Barry Davis, start. John Motson, bench. It's a very personal thing, isn't it, Kyle? Brian Moore, because he was ITV and not BBC, so he can go.
You should read out the same statement I read out the other day when I wouldn't do it.
Well, the truth is, Barry Davis is the only one alive and he lives around the corner from me, so I'm definitely going to start with Barry Davis. I'll get no comeback from anyone else. It's actually somebody came to me last night at, you know, sometimes you have people who've bought an auction item, they come into Match of the Day and they get a little tour and watch the program.
Yeah.
We had four guys last night and one of them said, oh, I love the podcast. I've got one for you. Sir Alex Ferguson, Pep Guardiola, Bobby Robson.
Ooh.
And I thought to myself, right, I couldn't possibly get rid of Bobby Robson. I just wouldn't. So I think I'd go Pep Guardiola, Bobby Robson, and then Sir Alex Ferguson, because I never got on with him anyway. So I don't care what he thinks.
Oh. You never got on with the great Sir Alex Ferguson?
No, he's had a few jibes at me over the years. He was a bit anti-BBC, I think. But anyway, water under the bridge. And while I contemplate that water, let's have a breather. Welcome back to the Rest Is Football question and answer episode with me, Gary Lineker, Micah Richards and Alan Shearer. One from David Hill. Hello, Gary, Alan and Big Meeks. Really enjoying the podcast. Thank you. Who do you think has been the best English manager never to be given the England job? Well, that'd be Brian Clough, wouldn't it?
You'd have to say that.
We're all in agreement.
Yeah, Brian Clough.
But that was easy.
Easy, yeah.
Spencer Comer, during your careers, is there any clubs you wouldn't play for? If so, which club and why? I know what your answer is, Alan.
I got hammered for my comment about Roker Park.
Remember when I said
I was only telling the truth just because of where you are, where you're born and who you support and all that. You couldn't play for Sunderland, could you?
Well, I turned down Brian Clough, our previous answer.
Yeah.
Because it was one of the reasons was, you can't play for Forest when you're a Leicester lad. It was the season where my last season at Barcelona, and I knew I had to move because obviously Cruyff came in and he, you know, messed me about, talked about that. So I was obviously going to go somewhere and had a bit of interest from various places. And it was one of those post-season tours with England, and we had a game in, I think it was like Sweden or Denmark, somewhere like that. I think it was Denmark. And I was rooming with Peter Shilton, as I always did. And I was actually on the loo. Most of my good stories about when I'm having a poo. So
you are full of shit.
And, exactly. And the phone went in the room and I heard Peter Shilton answer it. And I thought, Peter Shilton was the most confident bloke ever, you know, really, you know, really confident stuff. And then, but he sounded like he was a little bit in awe of whoever was on the phone. I thought, I wonder who he's talking to on the phone. So, and then I heard him say, Gary's on the loo. Hang on a minute. So, and then he shouted at me. So I came in, Peter Shilton put his hand over the mouthpiece of the phone. He went, it's Brian Clough. And I thought, oh shit, right, okay, blimey. I walk over and picked up the phone and he went, young man, have you washed your hands? And I went, yes, I have, Mr. Clough. And he went, call me Brian. I said, okay, tell me, are you signed, sealed and delivered? And I went, well, no, not yet. I said, I've got options, but nothing confirmed yet. So he went, would you consider coming back to England? I said, well, yes, I've definitely not ruled that out at all. Would you consider coming to Nottingham Forest? I went, no, not really. Why not? I said, well, you know, if I got a bit tongue-tied and I said, well, you know, if I come back to, you know, English football, it'd have to be to one of the, you know, the big clubs. Peter Shilton buried his head under his pillow at this point. And he said, Nottingham Forest is a big club. There's only Liverpool won more than us in the last 10 years. I said, well, I'm perfectly aware of your record, Brian. I said, it's incredible what you've achieved. But, you know, when I say a big club, you know what I mean? One of those, you know, one of the big grounds, one of the big places, London, etc. If you understand me, he went, no, I don't. Call me Mr. Clough and hung up.
And hung up on you.
And hung up, never, yeah.
Brilliant.
Wow. Never heard from him again, understandably so. Blake Kester asks, with the season coming to an end and players thinking of their holidays, which other players have you or would you go on holiday with? I'm sure Meeks has a story. The best podcast by far. Well, high praise. Keep up the good work. Who would you want to go on holiday with? I'd like to go on holiday with you too. That'd be nice.
It depends what sort of holiday though, because I
well,
feel like
fucking,
after 2 days...
It's fucking saga holiday for Gary.
Listen to your spring chicken there, Shearer. Yeah. Ooh. Players you would want to go with. I don't think I could have coped with going away with Gazza. And let me tell you, by the way, we have recorded an episode with Gazza that might turn into two episodes. It was absolutely hilarious and brilliant. And he was in fantastic form. And we look forward to sharing that with you. We're going to probably do it between the end of the season and the Euros. I think you'll love it.
I was ill with laughter. Oh, goodness me. I haven't laughed like that for a long time.
I know. It was 90 minutes of hilarity and not just the fact that he can't get anywhere near saying Micah correctly. But it won't spoil. No spoilers. No spoilers.
Yeah. Okay, no spoilers.
Yeah.
I would have liked to go to Vegas with Big Meeks just for a long weekend.
Back in my 20s. 19, 20, 21 days. That's when I was in my prime. The prime of partying.
The prime of partying.
Mario Balotelli?
No, because Balotelli, if you go with Balotelli, he's too famous. You get caught when you're with Balotelli. You know, you can't be sneaking and, you know, you can't be getting...
sneaking?
He's too loud and he gets caught too much. Yeah, you've got to go with people who, you know how to move correctly on a night out so you don't get caught. And I'm not naming any players because I don't want to incriminate any of my former teammates, but we had some great times. Oh, I'm reminiscing about it now.
So are you sweating?
Doheny Drive, Los Angeles. Oh, my
God. I think you should leave it there, mate.
Where did it all go wrong? Which brings me perfectly to a question about George Best. Benjamin Smith, as a long-time listener, I don't think I've ever heard any of you mention George Best. What do you think of him as a player, and what if George Best had played for England? You wouldn't have seen him play, Micah. Alan, did you catch him at all? Probably can't remember. I'm probably the only one old enough to remember. He was so brilliantly gifted wide player most of the time, ghosted by people as though they were standing still.
Some of the bits that I saw, Gaz, in terms of, you know, when you're on about the pitches and the dribbling, yeah, and how he went past players and how players could side you down then. I mean, he made it look so easy on the bits that I saw.
Yeah, I mean, it's all so difficult with different eras, but, you know, if any conversation about the best sort of British player ever, he'd have to be right in it, wouldn't he? He was so good. Him and Bobby Charlton would probably be the other one, both in the same team, the Busby Babes.
Yeah.
But yeah, unbelievable talent. I met him a few times. In fact, they did the FIFA Best 100 or something, where they 100 all-time best players. And this is just me trying to give myself a mention of getting in the top 100. But there were a few kind of British players there, and I was there. Michael Owen was there, and George Best was kind of latter stages of his life, really. And he was drinking so much that I remember when we walked in for the presentation, Michael Owen was on one side of him, I was on the other, basically holding him up, which felt a bit, yeah, you know, obviously sad, and we all know, you know, what happened to him. But he was a lovely, lovely man. I mean, he really was. And obviously had his, you know, alcoholic problems and health issues. But what a footballer.
What a talent.
Absolutely brilliant. Dave Goodaham. As a former regional journalist, what's been the biggest row you have ever had with a journalist? And what has been the biggest lie you have read about yourself in the media? Cool, been a few of those. Can't remember really having any rows with journalists. There's a few times I've read stories where, you know, that had pissed you off. That still goes to this day, usually in the Daily Mail. I can't remember confronting journalists. I mean, we used to get on quite well with them in the England days that I played. They
used
were
to fly
always
with
on
them,
the
travel with them. Yeah, used to go on the same plane and everything else, yeah, didn't you? Yeah, it used to be a right pain in the arse waiting for the, because they had to all file their reports and you were sat there on the plane waiting for them to do all that and then get back on. And so, yeah, it was very different back then. Wasn't it? There were certainly better relationships.
Yeah. Well, they were always the same journalists, weren't they, as well? Each paper had their designated journalists and they'd follow us, you know, they'd be around and you interview them, and or they'd interview us, I should say. But they were, you got to know them quite well. And generally, like as when we spoke to Henry Winter the other day, generally they, you know, they're decent people. It was always the front of the paper that you had to worry about rather than necessarily the sports journalists, I think. No comment from Michael.
You laughing, Michael?
Okay. Last question from Jordan Hines. Can all three of you speak about the most memorable or favourite member of the coaching staff they experienced whilst at their clubs, etc.? Micah, I'm thinking Chappie for you. Who's Chappie?
Oh, Les Chapman.
Ah, yes.
He was the kit man at Man City for as long as I can remember. Must be 20. He's left now, but he was just a brilliant bridge between the managers, like the medical staff, and the players as well. You know, somebody who just links it all together, and he would be totally honest with you as well. Like if you played rubbish, He would tell you he'd play rubbish. He was none of that sugar-coating nonsense, and he would stay out longer if he needed, you know, because some kit men want to be done by 2-3 o'clock, don't they? But he would stay, and he wouldn't moan. He would leave kit, say I could take kit. He was just an absolute diamond of a fella.
You build up, certainly I did anyway, great relationships with the kit men, with the physios. At all my clubs, Southampton, Blackburn and Newcastle, the kit men were amazing. The physios were great. And even, you know, even the, I think even like the assistant managers have to be, you have to have such a good relationship. I mean, Dennis Rolfe was beginning it with Chris Nicol at Southampton. Then we had Ray Harford and Tony Parks at Blackburn. We had Terry McDermott and Derek Fazakli and John Carver throughout the years at Newcastle. So I think that's such a hugely important role.
It really is, isn't it? The number two.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of that liaison. They're kind of the good cop against the manager's bad cop, aren't they, a lot of the time. I always had good relationships with the physios because they're the ones that got me out of training. I'll give a mention to Fred Street because I bumped into him Fred. A few months ago. I hadn't seen him for donkey's years, and he's still going strong.
Fred,
close to 90 or so now. Wow. But he was England's physio for forever, and just a lovely, lovely guy. And like most players, always relied on the physio to get you out there. Great way to finish. That's it for our question answer episode. Don't forget the Gazza one will be coming to you in a couple of weeks, probably. You'll love that. But for now, goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.